We're now going to hear God speak to us through reading his word. Today we will be reading from Isaiah chapter 9, verses 1 to 7. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, but in the future he will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in a land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged a nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel full of fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. I will now pass over to Reverend Yin for today's message.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Well, again, let me welcome everyone here this morning to the very last Sunday before Christmas. And I hope it's been a splendid year for you, even despite all the COVID issues. And it'll be interesting to see what happens next year. Well, when I was a child, I wanted to drive trains. That was my passion in life when I was a little kid. And why is that? I grew up with pictures of what a train driver was like. I don't know if anyone remembers Casey Jones. Anyone remembers Casey Jones? Well, maybe in the 70s, actually. Casey Jones was an American train driver back in the 1700s, you know, the cowboys, Wild West. And he was such a cool train driver. He would do all these crazy adventures on his train, right? And so I thought, wow, I want to be like that. So I wanted to be a train driver. Then later on, I wanted to be a fireman because I used to grow up in what was known as rescue. These were the American sort of firemen who did, that didn't just put out fires, it did crazy things. And I think, geez, I want to be like that. Well, later on, I want to fly planes and then I get nosebleed when I get high. So these days I do the best and go my flight simulator, which is still a dream sort of fulfilled. What did you want to be when you were a little kid? What did you want to grow up to be? What did you want to grow up to be? And maybe, you know, for people who are parents like Tim and Michelle, what do you want Mia to grow up to be? Dan, what do you want your kids to grow up to be? And Yong and Vanessa, what do you want your child to be, to grow up to be? Well, when we come to Christmas, Christmas is all about feasting and families and carol singing, but Christmas is also about kids. It's all about children. And so it's not surprising that one of the most well-known and loved songs at Christmas time is this famous song, What Child Is This? It's a well-known song. Unlike the very first song that we looked at with Dan, this is not well-known. And I don't know if you know the song, but here are some of the lyrics of the song, What Child Is This? What child is this who lay to rest on Mary's lap is sleeping? Whom angels greet with anthems sweet, while shepherds watch are keeping. This is Christ the King, whose shepherds guard and angels sing. Haste, haste to bring him loud, the baby, the song, son of Mary. So bring him incense, gold and myrrh. Come peasant king to own him, the King of kings salvation brings. Let loving hearts enthrone him. Raise a song on high, the virgin sings her lullaby. Joy, for Christ is born, the babe, the son of Mary. And then there's that last stanza, or last chorus. Now spears shall pierce him through, the cross he bore for me, for you. Hail, hail, the word made flesh, the babe, the son of Mary. Like Jingle Bells and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, This sort of carol has come iconic during Christmas time. So what do we know about this song, this carol? Well, it was written in 1865 by a guy named William Chatterton Dix. He was the son of a surgeon. He was, but went on not to follow his father's footsteps, become a businessman in Glasgow, Scotland. He worked as a as a manager in a maritime insurance company. But one day he got sick, and I mean really, really sick, deathbed sick. And during that time of his sickness and slow recovery, what did he do? He read the Bible. And as he read the Bible, he comes across this scene in the gospel of the Magi's coming to visit Jesus, to see Jesus. Winston preached on this last Sunday. It's about them coming to see Jesus as a baby. And as William Chatterton was reflecting on this passage, the question in his mind is, and no doubt in his thinking as he sort of tries to imagine what the Magi would have thought, or the questions, what will this child grow up to be? What will this child grow up to be? They recognized him as the king, and they recognized that he is the king that the whole world needs to worship. But the big idea of this song is that Jesus is the king. But it begs the question, what sort of king will Jesus grow up to be? What sort of king will grow up to be? And I think this is where Isaiah chapter 9, the passage, just comes into its own. Because hundreds of years prior to the coming of Jesus, Isaiah predicting the coming of this child and what this child would grow up to be. So as we sing, we're not going to sing it down for you, but when we come across this carol, whether it's a Christmas Day service, or when we come across this carol, we always should keep Isaiah chapter 9 in mind. Today, there are 4 points that I want to bring out, 4 simple points. They're not sort of slick and memorable points, but they capture the idea, right? We talk about the context of Christmas, Jesus coming to bring light, Jesus who is the ruler of the world I'll stand on, and Jesus who will implement this process. But let's have a look at the first one. The context of Christmas, a world filled with deep darkness. You know, we often read this famous passage in Isaiah chapter 9, and this is the passage we often come across. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. We often know the passage. We can, even many people who don't know, go to church and don't read the Bible, are familiar with that opening stanza, that opening line. But what often they don't think about is the previous section. We look at that verse, but we give very scant attention to what goes on beforehand. And we give scant attention to the context of this. But it's important, because when you understand the context of Isaiah chapter 9, it really gives more weight to what Isaiah is talking about in verses 6 to 7. More weight, more depth to it. So when you go to the opening verses from verses 1 to 5, what do you find in verses 1 to 5? You basically find a world in tears. That's what you see. You see a world in darkness and despair. A world filled with sadness and, as I said, in tears. Look at how Isaiah chapter 9 begins. Isaiah chapter 9. Nevertheless, there will be what? Gloom. He speaks of a world in gloom. He speaks of a world in distress. In darkness, you see that in verse 2. It's not just darkness, it's people living in the land of deep darkness, is what Isaiah says. You go to verses 4. It's a world which is in slavery. They carry heavy, oppressive burdens on their backs. There is a world that is oppressed. A world where there is endless wars, war after war, not only at the international level, even the national, but even a world that's filled with conflict, even in their homes. This is the context in which we need to understand the Christmas story. And when you understand this, you see, the problem that we have whenever we come to Christmas is that Christmas is often portrayed very differently. Christmas is often portrayed as the picture of the perfect family, where they're exchanging gifts and something like that, and where there is a picturesque thing of Christmas trees, etc., etc. And if this is how people picture Christmas, which is how it's often portrayed in commercials, at Westfield, and something like that, no wonder that Christmas is a time that most people hate. Because no one has this perfect family. Worse still, it is the most painful time. Because whether we like it or not, there are still thousands, if not millions of people where Christmas is still spent alone, painfully alone. Christmas is presented as that perfect picture, perfect family. But if anything, it reminds us of our brokenness, of our own sadness, of our aloneness. And I know for me personally, I hated Christmas because I grew up in a broken family. When I come to church, we have Christmas days and everyone will go off to their nice, happy families, open their presents, nice family meals, but I would always go back to home filled with tension and conflict and sadness and tears. I know for myself, I hated Christmas. But the great thing about this passage in Isaiah, it's so real and thus so relevant because it is actually real about the world that we live in. It is a world filled with deep, deep darkness. But that comes back to our next point. Because what is the next point? Jesus comes to bring light to this world of deep, deep darkness. It's in this context of such brokenness, of such despair, of such aloneness, that Isaiah comes to its own. Because listen to the good news that Isaiah proclaims. Nevertheless, there will be what? No more gloom. No more gloom. There will be honor rather than shame. Look at verse 2. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. Leaving that there's a light has dawned. That is, we're talking about a new age from darkness to light, from despair to what? In verse 3, joy. You have enlarged the nation, increased their joy. That is to say, a nation that's living in darkness, despair, Jesus comes to bring in a new era of prosperity and endless joy. And that's how it's often, again, joy, rejoicing. Four times it's said in that one verse. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest. In agrarian culture, they always look forward to the harvest. And when the harvest comes, there is great, great rejoicing, particularly after a time of immense drought. Or in the midst of a battle, when they have finally won their victory over their enemies, there is incredible joy because they have won and the war is over. And in verse 4, it's a picture of freedom, of burdens being taken off you. Or in verse 5, a picture of the end of conflict, all sorts of conflict, because know what? Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for fire. Everyone looks forward to that day when all conflicts at every level come to an end. Or you jump down to verse 7. It is a world marked by justice and righteousness. You see, in the world of deep darkness, that's the real world. The good news is that Jesus brings, what does he bring? An end to gloom, an end to darkness, and to replace it with joy, rejoicing, freedom, peace, and justice, and so on and so forth. And so the second point that we need to say from this is that Jesus comes to bring light to this world of deep darkness. But that begs the most obvious question, how and when? To the first question, then, Jesus is able to do this because he is the loving dictator of the world. That's a crazy phrase, but let me explain what that means. The first thing that needs to be said is that Jesus is obviously the ruler of the world. We often keep Jesus wrapped up in nappies and always in a manger, never grows up. But when this prophecy proclaimed, Jesus grew up, and what did he become, grew up to be? He is the ruler of the world. See that in verse 6? The government will be on his shoulders. See, we're happy to sing, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given. But what child is this? He is the ruler. The government will be on his shoulders. Notice this, of the greatness of his government, he will reign on David's throne over his kingdom. And David was the most powerful ruler of the world at the time. But it begs the question, doesn't it? What sort of king will Jesus go on to be? Will he be like in the modern insane of ScoMo, a prime minister? Will he go on to be like Biden, the president of the United States, the most powerful ruler of the Western world? Or maybe the most powerful ruler of the Asian world, maybe of the world? What sort of king will Jesus go on to be? Well, when the Bible talks about a ruler, do you know what rulers were like in the ancient world? What were they like? They were dictators. That's what they were. Rulers were dictators. The king was a dictator. He wasn't like, you know, the prime minister, the president, or even the chairman of China. I can never pronounce his name properly. I have to say that. Because they can be ousted, they can be voted out, they can be laughed at. You can say things against them and laugh at them, except maybe in China you can't do that. But in around the world, you know, he's the butt of jokes, so to speak. They can be voted out. The king, the rulers and kings of the world in the ancient world were dictators. And when you think about dictators, that's what we think about: brutal, ruthless. Like Stalin and Hitler and Mao Zedong. But like I said, the ancient rulers were dictators. David, King David, who was often described as a man of God's own heart, was a dictator. What did he do when he took over the whole kingdom? He got rid of his enemies. That's what he did. He didn't just sort of say, you can't do that. He just got rid of them. He killed them. And Solomon, who's described as the wisest king in the ancient world, that everyone wanted to come listen to him, what did he do? When he became to power, he basically got rid of his enemies. He basically killed them. That's what he did. You see, we need to understand the ancient world. When we say the Bible, when we say that Jesus is Lord, he's king, you know what you're saying? You're saying he's the ruler, he's the dictator. Now, that's important because for those of us who've been trained in, say, some gospel presentation like Two Ways to Live, God is a loving ruler of the world. Ruler? I have to say that word sings an empty note in our Western democratic world. A better word is that God is a what? Loving dictator of the world. Well, what sort of dictator? This is where Isaiah chapter 9 comes to its own. What sort of dictator will he be? Well, have a look at verse 6. He is a wonderful counselor. That is to say, he is a wise dictator. A wisdom which is the inspiration and here, the delight of all people. A wise dictator. That's why it describes him as wonderful counselor, marked with great, great wisdom, sound judgment, depth of insight. We saw a glimpse of that even with Solomon, who was the wisest king, and Jesus, who is the dictator, has a wisdom that outshines that of Solomon. He is the mighty God. And the idea here is that he is not just all talk and empty promises, but he carries real power. That's the problem with our leaders today. They make big promises and maybe out of good intention. But the truth of the matter is they find it hard to deliver. Why? Because they have to negotiate. They have to win the popularity vote. They have to try and draw upon resources. And no matter how good their intentions are, no matter how noble their promises are, They are at the whims of all their opponents and even their own limitations. But not so Jesus. He is the mighty God. He carries with him real infinite power. So what he promises, he will deliver. Because there's no one that can stop him. Literally no one. But here's the other thing. He's the everlasting Father. What does that mean? Here's the most surprising. He is the loving dictator. The Father in the ancient world, when the Bible talks of Father, it carries the idea of care, of compassion. So Jesus is not merely a cold, uncaring, ruthless, violent dictator. He is actually the loving dictator of the world who generally cares for the people of his world. He doesn't use them as merely tools for his own narcissistic ends. His people are the ends. He generally cares for them. He has compassion on them. He is the loving dictator. But he is the Prince of Peace. What does that mean? When Paul speaks of peace, it is more, not least, but more than just peace of mind. It's much more than that. When the Bible speaks of peace, it's more than, but not less than, the end or the absence of war. Peace in the Bible is the idea of blessing, the blessed life, the good life. That is to say, when Jesus says, when Isaiah speaks of Jesus as the Prince of Peace, he's saying that he is the one who will bring wholeness and blessing and joy to the world. And how can you have joy and blessing unless there's an end to war? But an end to war doesn't necessarily mean blessings and joy. But Jesus will do one ante up more. Not only will he bring an end to it, hostility, he will instigate a program to actually bring about joy and prosperity and things like that. But here's the other thing. Jesus is also the just and righteous dictator. He's the dictator who actually is just and righteous. And that's amazing when you think about it. Because, you know, we know dictators who are brutal and violent, who are corrupt, who side with the powerful and squash the vulnerable and the weak and the helpless and the poor. Their dictatorship is marked by injustice and oppression. But Jesus' dictatorship is so, so different. It's marked by justice and righteousness. He does not favor the powerful and the rich over and above the poor and the worthless. For him, he will show justice to all, whether you're powerful or you're poor or weak. He will show justice to all. He will show no favor to anyone. And that is a great leader to have, isn't it? And it's not just simply that he will do it and then he gets squashed, no. The whole DNA of this new world that he speaks of is established in justice. The very fabric of this kingdom of his, it's all about justice and righteousness. That's coupled with love and wisdom and care and prosperity. And it also says here, he is the eternal dictator, because there will be no end to his rule from that time on and forever. Every ruler, every king, every dictator in history have wanted to be the eternal king. Hitler had his idea of an endless, a thousand-year reign. You know, everyone wants to be in office for as long as they can. And Jesus says here, and well, Isaiah says here, his kingdom will be without end. In other words, Isaiah prints to us, when you have this sort of loving, wise, caring dictator, what is the world like that he rules? Well, it's like what he said in the earlier part of Isaiah. There will be what? No more gloom. There will be honor for all his people. There will be great light, not darkness, but light. That light has dawned in the deep darkness. There will be joy throughout the land, joy upon joy upon joy upon joy throughout the land. For all people, not just the rich and the powerful, but for all people regardless. There will be freedom. There will be an end to conflict, an end to hostility. And there will be justice and righteousness for all people. And this is not just hearsay. It is something that will happen. Why? Because Jesus is able to do this because he is what? The loving dictator of the world. This comes to my last point. When will this happen? When will this happen? And the answer is given to us in my last point. That the Bible tells about, talks about two-step, this is very corporate strategic thinking, two-step implementation program. That the way that Jesus brings us in is changing hearts and changing minds. Let me explain. You see, these words uttered by Isaiah in the 6th century, BC, and these words which have been repeated for the last 2,000 years often seems like empty words, don't they? Why is that? Because you still, for 2,000 years, even despite these words, we still have a world where poverty is a problem, where we still have violence in the streets in all our cities, where we still see violence even in the homes. As one person once said to me, a pastor, that the most dangerous place these days used to be in the streets, but now in the homes. And where global warming and pollution is still unchecked throughout the world. And even despite 2,000 years of singing that song, and not 2,000, even the of reciting these words of Isaiah, and the last 100 years of singing the song, what child is this? For most people in the world, they still celebrate Christmas alone and in tears. So the question you've got to ask is, what's gone wrong? Are Isaiah's words nothing more than just pie-in-the-sky sentimentalism that is what Christmas is all about? And that's why I talk about an implementation program. And the point here is that the way Jesus will bring this in is a two-step process. Change hearts, change the world. Let me give you an example and illustrate this way. Imagine that you own a salubrious apartment, very, very lush, very nice, something like that, right? And you rent it out to tenants. You check out their sort of resume and you say, they're pretty good to go, let's go. You rent out to them and then you come back to check how things are and you discover to your horror what? That your nice apartment's completely trashed, absolutely trashed. Now, in your kindness, say, don't do that. Just don't do that. And you repair it out of your goodness. And you make it brand new again. And you come back and this, what? It's completely trashed again. So what do? You kick him out, don't you? Would you kick him out? I would. I'd kick him out, right, and get better tenants. Let's paint another scenario. You're walking the streets of Sydney and you come across this guy, homeless. Comes from a fairly messed up background, broken family. Dad was a murderer, thief. Mum was a prostitute. Household is all about drugs and alcohol. You as a, this guy was beaten silly, days in, day out, sexually abused, physically beaten, emotional wreck. You take pity on the guy. You walk by, you take pity on the guy and say, man, I've got to help this guy. Got to help him big way. What do? You go and approach the guy. Hey, look, I want to care for you. I want to give you a place that you can call home. I want to give you this place. you can live in this place, all expenses paid, because I want to care for you. I don't want you to live out in the streets under the heat of the sun, the cold winter nights. I want to give you a place that you can call your own. He's so grateful. A few months later, you come back and guess what? The place is completely trashed. And you say to the guy, look, just don't do that. You just don't do that. So you fix up the place. Okay, look, come on, let's make it right. I'm going to fix it up, but you just don't do that. And you come back months later and guess what? It's trashed again. So what do you do with the guy? Do you kick him out? Well, your intention, no, you can't kick him out. You know why? Because you want to care for the guy. He's so messed up. You don't want to add to his mess. And you really want to care for him. So what do you do? You know what you got to do? You got to heal that person. You got to sort out his messed up brain. You got to sort out his twisted mindset and something like that. He's so broken. He's so sort of dark. His heart is so deep in darkness. You have to restore him. And so what you do to him, send him to rehab. I mean, not just the cleaning, but you work on rehabilitating him. You're working to restoring his soul, restoring his mind. You walk in and work in terms of helping, teaching him how to get his life back in order. And you go through this painful process, a loving process, but a painful process to sort this guy out because you want to help him. It's more than just a home. You got to help this guy. And when you help the process, and when you finish the process, then what do? Then you say to him, now, this is your home. This is your home. When you look at our world, we live in a broken, messed up world. Absolutely messed up. Twin Towers, for those of us who have two planes just smashing into the Twin Towers of New York, it became iconic of just how broken our world is. And what is the cause of all our mess? Is it our broken political systems? Is it the fact that Western world takes more resources from the third world countries? Is it religion as much people? You know what the problem is? It's people. It's people. It's you and me. We are messed up, broken. We are people living in rebellion towards God, steep in our sins, reveling like pigs in the mud, reveling in our deception, in our grossness. We are so messed up, it's not funny. And what do we need to do? We need to get ourselves back in order. We need to get ourselves back in order with God, to be reconciled to Him and have ourselves lives sorted out. And we think about it, isn't this what the gospel is all about? Isn't this what Isaiah is all about? It's about how God fixes people up before he fixes the world. You see, Jesus is the loving dictator of the world. He's a loving dictator. He wants to create, his plan is to create a new world, to create a new world. But before he fixes the world, what does he do? He needs to change lives. You and I are a testimony of the changed life which Jesus has done. I myself, coming from a broken, messed up family, Jesus changed my life and sorted me out. Coming from a family where my parents, just some violence there and abuse, but Jesus teaching me how to love my wife and love my kids. You see, Jesus has got to sort us out. And when he sorts us out, then he will sort out the world. When he sorts out us out, then he will bring in the new world where there is no more sadness and tears. And isn't that what Jesus is doing now? This Christmas time and throughout the world, he's sending out his good news throughout the world, calling people, come on, just come back to me and let me sort you out. And that's his business, sorting people out. And when he sorts them out, When that job is done, then he will change the world. And then we look forward to a new heaven and new earth where there will be no more sadness, no more tears, no more death, no more crying. What child is this? You know, it's a well-known Christmas carol. Oftentimes we don't know what we're singing at Christmas. So it's good that we dive deep into these words. It's a rich song that calls all humanity to ponder once again, what child is this that we worship at Christmas? We learn from scripture that he's king, he's ruler, but we learn even more so that he's actually the dictator, the loving dictator. And what's he doing now? He's changing hearts. And one day when he's finished that work, he will change the world. Let me pray. Father in heaven, we give you thanks that Jesus is the ruler, the king, the loving, wise, almighty, compassionate, just, righteous dictator of the world, who in now is just changing hearts and minds. And one day he will bring in the new heavens and new earth. And we look forward to that day. Amen.